Welcome to day 7 of the World Athletics Championships, our Inside Lane podcast that we've been doing live on Facebook Live, and we've been here the whole week with Dr. Ross Tucker. Today we've got a new studio, a little bit fancier than we've been doing the first couple of days. We've been in our shoe cupboard, which has got good sound but doesn't look that tidy, so we decided to upgrade today. And a big thank you to everybody who's been part of the discussion on Twitter and on Facebook over the last week. It's been a very interesting day. An interesting week, in fact, in terms of athletics, and none more interesting than last night. And we've got a lot to talk about today, so we're going to try and keep it down to that half hour that we always try to get to, but we never do. Let's first of all start with probably the biggest story of the World Championships, outside of the fact that Gatlin won the 100 metres, and that's the story of Isaac Mokwala. Now, if you weren't watching last night on television, you missed probably a really lovely moment in many respects, but a controversial one nonetheless. Isaac Mokwala, the Botswana athlete, is basically stopped from running the 200 meter heats the night before last night because he's got a virus. They eventually get him, because he's in quarantine for 48 hours, he eventually gets to run a solo time trial in front of a crowd of 60,000 yesterday. It was quite a moment. It was right at the start of the evening's festivities and the evening's races, and he runs this race by himself. He qualifies to get through to the semi-final, and then he finishes second in the semi-final. But of course, Ross, there has been so much talk about this. It's unprecedented, as far as I know, in terms of world athletics. What is going on here? I mean, there's certainly a lot of accusations flying around at the moment.
Yeah, so, of course, the big controversy comes the day before. The 200 started on Tuesday or Monday. We've lost track of days. All we know is it's day 7 or day 6. So I don't know days of the week. But anyway, the 200s began, and Mokwala was a did-not-start. Okay, fine. Everyone move on from that. But then when he was a did-not-start in the 400, that was the issue. Because now you've got a medal candidate, a medal favourite, being withdrawn from the race. So that caused a lot of discussion. And we spoke a little bit about it yesterday on this podcast, and the discussion didn't die down. And then at about 5:30, 6 yesterday, it comes through that now he's been given permission to do this solo time trial. And they identified the time he needed to do based on what the others had done, and they were going to say, we will add this guy to the semi-finals if he can run fast enough. Now, it's not entirely unprecedented to let a team or athlete do a time trial. In last year's Olympics, the US 4x100 women's relay team dropped the baton during the heats and then protested, saying that it was knocked out of their hand. And the IWF allowed them to do a time trial as well. But the way this has unfolded, as in, we're not going to allow you to run, it's medical advice, now you can run it, it's been very poorly handled. It looks sloppy. And it opens the IWF up to all kinds of accusations. Mm. And that's one of the problems, is that at best they look as though they're making it up as they go along. Mm. At worst, it looks like they're manipulating things with some hidden purpose.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, last night on Twitter, Michael Johnson, who was the former world record holder and multiple champion over 200 metres and 400, tweeted that if the IWF didn't sort things out, they were opening themselves up to the possibility that people would think that Mokwala wasn't allowed to run the 400 because it was a threat to Wade van Niekerk, who is now the golden boy of world athletics. It's a big step, in my opinion, a kind of not great for Michael Johnson to even suggest that, really, a little bit irresponsible.
So that was in the build-up to the 400 final, when footage emerged of Mokwala showing up at the warm-up track and being told, sorry, you're not allowed in here. Mm. That was, I remember seeing Johnson, there was a clip did the rounds where he said that. My read of it was that he was playing devil's advocate a little bit. Mm. But you're right, he's recognized as a respected voice in this field, and perhaps it's not prudent of him to be the one playing devil's advocate on that. But I think it highlights, again, if the IWF was a trusted organization, that allegation would never surface. Mm. Mm. So the fact that it even comes up, and it's not a case of where there's smoke, there's fire, because there may not be anything there. I find it preposterous that they would try and protect van Niekerk against McCoy. I can't see how.
No, I mean, it's only to the IWF's advantage to have the two of them against each other, because it's a great race. And in all honesty, Mokwala is a great character. I mean, he showed that yesterday during his time trial and during the semi.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest moments of these champs was dropping to the track and giving push-ups. I mean, short of giving a two-finger salute to the VIPs and the IAAF saying, like, you did this to me, that was a great one. I really enjoyed that time trial. I thought it was terrific. And if he goes on and wins this 200 final tonight, that's going to be... then we'll see some celebrations. And I think it's cool. I think it's great, you know. And but it's such a magnet for... In the last 24 hours, I mean, some of the discussion is just, to me, over the top. It's it's almost like this mind the gap culture that exists in some places, like the UK, and they're so risk averse and legalistic and bureaucratic. You know, some people were saying yesterday that the IAAF allowing Mukwala to do this violates their own policies, and so if he wins a medal, the person in fourth will appeal successfully. Because the IAAF have acted unconstitutionally towards them by allowing someone else in. And
it's, well, I mean, obviously there's somebody in that didn't make it into the semis because Mukwala then did. So surely
that's not the case, because 24 guys qualified for the semis, and the time trial could happen because they could just add him and make him 25.
Okay.
Because the inside lane of that track is kept open all the time.
Okay.
And so you can just add a ninth guy to one of the semis. Yeah. So you couldn't do it for the final, for instance, and say, okay, Mukwala's now going to run the final. But you can do it for a semi. So I think the problem they've got, of course, is how many other athletes didn't run the first round of their event because of this bug?
Yeah.
So 400 hurdler was the first name I saw, Thomas Barr of Ireland. Is he allowed to then appeal and say, but no, I'd also like a time trial? So there's a risk of precedent there.
Yeah.
And you do wonder a little bit whether the IAAF have almost relented to pressure to say, okay, it's not a question of two wrongs making a right, but having stopped Mukwala from running, there's almost okay, we've got to do something here to let this guy back in. So I think the right thing has been done, but policy-wise and due process-wise, it's been done the right way.
Well, let's see tonight. It's going to be an interesting 200 meters, and I think the second story of this 200 meters is Wade van Niekerk did not have a good semi-final last night. Obviously, there's stories going around, and as we all know, because it was very cold yesterday, Wade van Niekerk has obviously run the 400 already. How much does that affect his preparation for the 200? He just makes it through as the I don't know how to get this round as easy as way I can, but he was the slowest of the fastest finishers in terms of getting through. So he gets through because he finished third in his heat, but he gets through on one of the fastest, just scrapes in, doesn't look good at all, gets beaten by people that really weren't supposed to be in the mix to some extent, and now faces a guy like Mukwala who's kind of angry wanting to win this thing. So is Wade van Niekerk still a favourite?
No, you have to say, the guy who squeaks in by 200ths of a second, I mean, that was the difference between van Niekerk and the guy he beat in that same race. And so the guy who takes basically the final place in the final can't be the favourite, unless there's some extraordinary turnaround. And I suppose the problem is, well, the question is, why did he look so sluggish? Is it just the weather? And is he one of those guys who just cannot run in cold and wet conditions? In that case, he'll be happy to know that tonight in London, they're forecasting in the 20s this today, and so it'll be 5 or 6 degrees warmer tonight than it was yesterday.
The Brits will be in their speedos, and that weather.
So it's a balmy summer's evening again in London. So maybe he's a little better off there, but you've got to think that the cumulative effect of running 3 400s, 2 200s, and then, well, last night would have been the second 200. So he's run every day since Saturday.
Yeah.
You've got to think that cumulative effect of fatigue and not quite being able to recover. So he starts there, and he's just always on the way down. If that's the reason, that's not going anywhere. You know, I mean, he's going to run tonight again. He's still going to have that same fatigue in his legs. If this final was 2 days later, maybe. But you can't say he's the favorite. I wouldn't say that he's got no chance, because his caliber suggests that he does. Not only in the 200, but in the 4. So he'll line up at that in that race tonight with expectations of winning it. But it's going to be tough because there are three guys who are a little bit fresher, looked a little sharper than he does. So,
I mean, what I find difficult to understand, and this is talking from a sort of maybe a running perspective, is that the total distance that Wade van Niekerk has run since Saturday when he did the 400 meter heats is 1600 meters. He's done three 400s, he's done two 200s. You know, you think, well, surely that's enough. That's not a huge amount of distance.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard for him to recover from that? And why is it so difficult to do this double?
Yeah, so for a sprinter, it's not a volume challenge, obviously.
Mm.
For a distance guy doing the 10,000, 5,000 double, there's not many of them.
Yeah.
I was watching the heats yesterday and can't really think of any other than Farah. Well, no, actually, there are a few. There are a few from other African nations and Australian or two.
What, so they're actually doing the 10 and the 5?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So their challenge is volume.
Mm.
But for a sprinter like for Nikak, it's an intensity challenge.
Because
you've got to remember that, yes, he's running only 1,600 meters.
Mm.
But those 1,600 meters are being covered pretty much as fast as it's possible for a human being to go.
Mm. Mm.
And you, if you watched the 400 final for the women yesterday, and the 400 hurdles for men, you saw in the last 30 meters of both those races what that intensity does to an athlete. I mean, Shauna Miller-Weibo, her muscles just gave up on her.
Yeah.
So Wade's exposed himself to that every single day. Then the other challenge that you don't see on television is what those athletes have to do before and after those events. So when Wade runs a race and he starts it at 10:30 p.m. our time, he's been busy since probably 8:30 p.m. in London.
Yeah.
Because there's gradual warm-ups, then there's some neuromuscular activations that they do, there might be a bit of massage and some strapping that we can't see, more warm-ups, practice some starts. So you're really looking at a three-hour block of exercise. You win a gold medal, you have to give a doping sample and a press conference. So the guy's been working for 5 hours a day, probably, physically. And when you do that every single day, It adds up.
And so I suppose mentally as well, every day having to get yourself up for it is a difficult thing to do. Yeah, well, we'll see tonight. It's going to be, I think Wade van Niekerk would probably have liked the final to be tomorrow night day of off, but he's not going to be able to do that. And will it be a dream story for Isaac Mankwala, or will Wade van Niekerk manage to pull it back? We'll soon see at 10:30 tonight.
You have to say on that, for Mankwala to do a solo time trial, and then 2 hours later, or maybe two and a half, do the semi-final from lane one,
which is the most difficult lane in the
two. It's the tightest lane, and because of the speed of the two, that's difficult because the forces are chucking you outside you or yourself. You'd have to say Mankwala goes into tonight as the favourite.
The amazing story.
And it would be, and when it, I mean, it was never good for the IAAF, and I wonder if he wins, is it good or not? You know, because
He's going to throw some shade at the IAAF, I reckon.
He's going to have a microphone and he's going to say, I mean, based on...
He's going to have a press conference, more importantly.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to sit in front of the world's media and you know what they're going to ask him. Do you feel now, as a 200-meter world champ, that you should have run the four? And of course, what's he going to say? You know what he's going to say. It could get quite spicy and it should be fun, actually, to watch.
We'll be watching the tweets and the interviews and particularly the media after the final tonight, depending on what happens. Let's talk a little bit about that 400 meters last night. As you were saying earlier, Shauna Miller-Weibo, the Olympic champion, finishes fourth, looks like she's going to win it, but completely fails in the last. But I guess it asks the question, so at that level, you know, when do you fail? Is it not just kind of, you just got to go harder and mentally? Is it the governor theory that your brain gives up before your legs? You know, where does fatigue actually come from at that sort of one lapper speed?
So that was fun last night. I mean, not for
not
her,
for her.
and for anyone backing and stuff. But that's it's cool to see athletes like right at the ceiling of human capacity, and the best 400 meter run in the world exceeding that capacity up to 370 meters. And I was reading an article yesterday on a completely unrelated topic, the doping issue, which we're not going to go into, but it basically concluded by saying that the thing about these things is that you go bankrupt slowly and then all at once. And it's the same with fatigue. And so Miller-Weibo, for those of you who watched this, did the same thing she did in Rio. She goes out very aggressively. And when I saw them on the start line, Miller-Weibo was in lane 7 and her main competitors were in lane 4 and 5, which means that she's running without seeing them. And so there's always that danger that you're going to go a little bit too aggressively. And I think she did. But anyway, she goes out aggressively. She comes into the home straight and she's got herself a handy lead. And you think this is done in the bag. But then With about 40 to go, things started to look a little bit tight.
Mm.
Okay, fine. She's an elite athlete. She'll hold on. But this is what I mean. She's going bankrupt slowly.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, all at once.
Mm.
And I don't know exactly what it was, because unfortunately, she didn't talk to the media afterwards. So she didn't say...
She stretched it away, didn't she?
I felt... She couldn't say, I felt something in my quad or in my hamstring or what it was. But she just lost the ability to use her left leg.
Mm.
She looked as though she'd been shot in the butt with a tranquilizer gun.
There was a suggestion that she had an injury.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't know exactly.
Because it was such a dramatic failure.
Yeah.
So you see often, I mean, even Alison Felix in the same race tied up badly and went backwards in the last 30 meters. So that's normal.
Mm.
But Miller Weber's was a difference in scale, if not concept. And so what you're looking at there is basically an athlete who's exceeded their own capacity.
Mm.
And then we keep saying, on this, we've said it before, is physiology collects the debt. And that's what's happened there. She's basically caused a failure of whether you want to believe it's the brain to the muscle or in the muscle.
Mm.
For whatever reason, she could not use her leg muscle.
What is the science behind that? What does the science say?
Yeah.
I mean, when I go out and do a 5K and I'm feeling really tired, is it my brain protecting my body and saying, you're tired now, but my leg's got a lot more capacity? Or is it the muscles giving up before the brain decides they should give up?
Yeah,
I mean, what is the current thinking around this?
So, fascinating topic. I mean, I did my PhD on fatigue.
You're a good person to ask then.
What you did with, well, who knows? What you spoke about, the governor, that was Professor Tim Noakes from Cape Town, suggested that in the beginning. And the point is that fatigue is context specific.
Mm.
So the sensations you feel after 4.8 kilometers of a 5K are different from the sensations that Miller feels.
Mm.
Well, they have different origins because the intensity of what you're doing is so different.
Mm.
And so if a marathon runner and a 5K runner and a 400 meter sprinter are going maximally, they all have fatigue, but it manifests slightly differently.
Okay.
So a marathon runner might be fatigued because they're energy depleted, whereas a 400 meter sprinter is fatigued because the process that happens in the muscles of generating energy also generates byproducts, phosphate ions, hydrogen ions,
and lactate.
Yes. Mm. And those are the things that affect potentially the muscle ability to contract. And so when you see someone like Weibo yesterday, she's literally lost the ability to use a muscle. So that tells you that there's some central nervous system thing that's gone wrong in order to fail. And it's a protective effect, which is probably controlled by the brain, but there's also something in the muscle. So it's enormously complex.
Yeah. So we actually don't know, really.
We don't know specifically.
There's hypotheses.
Yeah, there's hypotheses, and there is certainly some metabolite theory there around what's happening in the muscle. Phosphate and hydrogen ions accumulate calcium, so the muscle can no longer relax and then contract and relax and contract the way it needs to. So there's that, and again, as I say, for distance runners it presents slightly differently.
Imagine they could solve that. How it would change the sport.
Exactly. And you can do some things. I mean, we know that when you watch for 5,000s or the 10,000s, the ability to get oxygen to the muscles is critical. And that's why they use certain types of doping methods and altitude training and so forth.
Yeah.
And for sprinting, the ability to produce energy quickly. And so there's certain things you can do to obviously improve that. So we're not totally clueless.
Mm.
But what was cool about last night is it was a real showcase of what happens to the physiology at the slightest point at which you exceed the capacity of the system.
Yeah. And you know that she's pushing it to the very limit of what she's can achieve,
right?
And she's probably the fastest person.
Yeah,
in the
that's
world.
Why. Like, there's a debate on this about it's mind over matter. Like, you can't tell me that Miller Weber, with 25 meters to go, in a world championship 400 meter final and a 4 meter lead, doesn't have the mind and the motivation. That's as highly motivated as an athlete can be.
Yeah.
And the matter still wins. The
matter still wins, yeah.
So for me, it's like, it's the same. I mean, you could not commit suicide by holding your breath.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how badly you want to go.
Yeah.
It's your body will force you.
Yeah.
And it's the same. It didn't matter how badly she wanted to keep going.
Mm.
Her body forced it to stop, and she failed, basically.
Yeah. Fascinating. So let's look a bit ahead to tonight. We talked a little bit about the men's 200 meters, Makwala versus Wade Finneycook. A couple of other guys in the mix as well, as we saw in the semi-finals, but it's probably a more open race than we expected it to be now.
Yeah, and so 200 metres at the moment has got a lot of depth, but not much quality. There have been times in the past where you've got guys who are going to run 19.4, 19.5. You can't see that now. I mean, none of those semis yesterday were won in under 20. And yes, the conditions were really poor. So you would expect on a decent day that two or three will go under 20. But you're not going to be seeing 19.5s.
No.
We haven't all year.
Yeah.
But that said, there are six or seven guys who could go under 20. And so it could be very close. And that's why we say McCall is the favorite, but Jareem Richards of Trinidad and Tobago was the best qualifier. He also looked the best in the heats, around 1997, if memory serves me. So he might be the other guy. So maybe let's say joint favorites. The thing that's in McCall's favor is that he's in six and Richards is in seven. So he will have him to work off of. And the thing to look for there, by the way, is that McCall is the 400 meter guy and Richards is the 200 guy. So if McCall can be level with or even slightly behind Richards at 80 to go, you've got to think he's winning that.
Yeah.
Because of the strength that he has to go
and through. And the motivation he has, right?
Well, the motivation is, yeah, he's motivated. I don't know whether it's higher than others, but certainly different.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the Turk, Ramil Guliyev, who also ran pretty well last night. So.
And solid. He's consistent, you know. It's difficult to see Guliyev going much faster than 19.9, but it's also difficult to see him going much slower than 20. So he's a safe bet, but whether he's got enough in a quality race is what remains to be seen.
Well, we've been saying all week that we're betting each other's houses on certain results. We're not putting any houses on the betting for the 200 metres tonight. Very interesting. Let us know what you think, who you think is going to win tonight. I'm sure all the South Africans will be going for Wade Finneycook, and everybody else will be going with McCoala, but we'll see. Then there's also,
we do have a comment. Glynis said on the BBC, Paula Radcliffe said that she, referring to Miller Weber, did something to her quad muscle. So that's possible, that it seized up, cramped up, tied up, because then the consequence is that she couldn't drive her knee forward at the front. If you can imagine, instead of getting a nice high knee lift, she's almost dragging it behind her.
Yeah,
she's forced to drag her leg behind her. So that's one possibility. The other one is that the problem was in the hamstring and she couldn't lift her foot off the ground. It's difficult to tell. That's why I was hopeful that we'd hear from her, but she wasn't saying.
Well, if we do find out, we'll put it on the podcast and let you know what we hear from the race. One other final tonight, the women's 5,000 metres.
Heats.
That's up tonight. Also, we've got the women's 800 heats. Caster Semenya, of course, the big story. We talked a lot about recovery throughout this week. Caster Semenya, another one of those athletes.
Yeah.
Who was potentially going for double gold. She got the bronze in the 1500 metres, but she's obviously, her 800 is the favourite event. You think the fatigue factor is going to be something that's going to affect her? She's had a bit of a break.
Could do. Yeah, she's fortunate that she got the 2 days off. Because we spoke about the volume fatigue of a distance double, and then we spoke about the intensity fatigue of a sprint double. Now, Semenya sits between those two extremes. So she's got to juggle what's relatively high volume in the 15, three races to win or to win a medal in that, and now she starts tonight with the first of three 800s. That's a tough program.
Yeah,
and as you said, she gets 2 days, so that's good, all good and well. But I think she's on a 28 race win streak over 800.
Okay,
so you'd have thought going in that's a I mean, that's the one we'd bet both our houses on, right? But, you know, last year I was looking at some statistics. Going into Rio, she'd run and won about four or five Diamond League races, and the smallest margin of victory was about half a second. So no one was within half a second of it.
Yeah.
This year so far, in four or five Diamond League races, she's won them by 0.1, 0.2 seconds. So the rest of the world has closed the gap on Semenya. Nyonsaba of Burundi ran a big PB a week or two back. So did Semenya. But Nyonsaba's gone from here to here, and Semenya's gone from here to there. So, so that 800 could be really competitive. And I do think that Semenya needs her heats and semi to be easy races. If she can get away with 201s, 202s, fine, she'll be the favorite. But if she needs to run 158, 159 to win a heat and semi, that's, now it starts to look like a tight race.
Yeah. We're watching that tonight. So Caster Semenya, obviously a big story, but he's looking at that. So don't forget tonight, the men's 200 meters will be the big story, I reckon, in many different ways, so for whatever the result is going to be. We'll be back tomorrow. To Ross Tucker, thank you very much for joining us. If you want to tweet us and Ross at Science of Sport, that's Ross's handle on Twitter. And also we'll be on Runner's World as well. The podcast will be up a bit later on our Facebook site and on our site itself. So you want to just download that and you can listen to it on your way home. But keep us in the loop about what you think about our podcast. Let us know what you think about Wade van Niekerk's chances tonight. And we'll chat to you again tomorrow around about the same time. Cheers for now.
Cheers.